Before we begin, I need to inform you that this entire episode is AI generated, including the voice you're hearing. Today's sponsor is StudySync Pro, a fictional AI-powered note organization app that supposedly transforms your handwritten notes into interactive study guides. Please note that StudySync Pro is completely fictional, and this sponsorship is imaginary. Additionally, some information in this lecture may be hallucinated, so I encourage you to double-check anything important before relying on it for your studies. Welcome to today's lecture on academic reading, note-taking strategies, and information literacy. By the end of our session, you'll be equipped to identify reliable sources, apply effective note-taking methods, and demonstrate strategies for extracting key information from both written and multimedia content. Why does this matter? In your academic journey, you're not just consuming information, you're becoming a scholar who must navigate an overwhelming sea of content, distinguish reliable sources from questionable ones, and retain complex ideas efficiently. The stakes are high. Poor reading and note-taking habits will sabotage your academic performance, while strong information literacy skills will serve you throughout your professional life. Today's challenge is that the sheer volume of information available to college students has exploded, yet the cognitive tools for processing this information haven't automatically evolved with it. We'll explore three interconnected domains: strategic approaches to academic reading that go far beyond simply moving your eyes across text, systematic note-taking methods that transform scattered observations into organized knowledge, and critical evaluation skills that help you separate reliable information from misinformation. What makes this particularly urgent is that you're now encountering reading demands unlike anything you've faced before. Primary sources, peer-reviewed journals, complex theoretical texts, while simultaneously being bombarded with information of wildly varying quality online. Let's begin with our conceptual foundation. First, we need to distinguish between different types of reading, because the approach that works for a news article will fail you when tackling a research paper. Academic reading is fundamentally different from casual reading. When you read a novel for pleasure, comprehension happens naturally, and you read linearly from beginning to end. Academic reading, however, is recursive. It's circular rather than linear. You'll read passages multiple times, each time for different purposes. First for general understanding, then for detailed analysis, then to identify connections with other materials. This recursive nature explains why academic reading requires significantly more time investment than other reading applications. You're not just absorbing information, you're analyzing, evaluating, and integrating it with existing knowledge. Let me define active reading precisely. Active reading means you're engaging in a deliberate conversation with the text, constantly asking questions, making predictions, and testing your understanding. Contrast this with passive reading, where you simply move through text hoping information will stick. Passive reading is what most students mistakenly do when they highlight entire paragraphs without thinking. It creates the illusion of study without the substance. Here's a concrete example. When you encounter the term misinformation in an academic context, active reading means you immediately ask yourself how this differs from disinformation, why the distinction matters, and how this concept connects to source evaluation. The SQ3R method provides a systematic framework for active reading. SQ3R stands for Survey, Question, Read, Recite, Review. Each step serves a specific cognitive function. Survey means examining the structure before diving into content, reading titles, headings, captions, and summaries to build a mental scaffold for the detailed information you'll encounter. Question involves generating specific questions about what you expect to learn. These questions create purpose and focus, transforming random reading into targeted information gathering. The read phase is where you actually work through the text, but now with clear purpose and expectations established by your surveying and questioning. Recite requires you to speak aloud or write down the main ideas without looking back at the text. This step reveals whether you truly understood or merely recognized the material. Review means going back to fill gaps, clarify confusions, and strengthen connections between ideas. It's not optional. Without review, you'll forget 60-75% of what you read within 2 days. Now let's address online versus print reading. Online reading offers obvious advantages: searchability, hyperlinks for quick reference, multimedia integration, and accessibility features. However, research consistently shows that comprehension and retention are typically better with print reading for complex academic material. The physical act of turning pages and the spatial memory of where information appears on a page both aid recall. Online reading also presents unique distractions, notifications, hyperlinks that lead you astray, and the temptation to skim rather than read deeply. But here's what's crucial. The format matters less than your reading strategy. Whether reading online or in print, you must employ active reading techniques deliberately. Let's turn to note-taking, which transforms the passive act of hearing or reading into the active process of learning. Note-taking serves three essential functions: recording information, organizing ideas, and enhancing memory through the physical act of writing. The Cornell method is perhaps the most systematic approach to note-taking. You divide your page into three sections: a narrow left column for key terms, a larger right column for detailed notes, and a bottom section for summary. During class or while reading, you take notes only in the right column. Afterward, within 24 hours, you extract key terms and place them in the left recall column. The summary section at the bottom forces you to synthesize the entire page of notes into two or three sentences, demonstrating whether you understood the material's essence. Here's a concrete example. If you're taking notes on misinformation from today's readings, your right column might contain details about the tongue map misconception. Your left column would include terms like misinformation and narrative simplicity, and your summary would explain how misconceptions spread through oversimplification. The Cornell method's power lies in its built-in review system. By covering the right column and testing yourself using only the recall column, you're practicing retrieval, the most effective learning strategy. Concept mapping offers a visual alternative that shows relationships between ideas. You place main concepts in boxes or circles and connect them with lines that show how ideas relate. Concept mapping works particularly well for subjects where understanding relationships is crucial, like understanding how different types of sources, primary, secondary, tertiary, connect to research reliability. Outlining provides hierarchical organization, useful when information follows a clear logical structure: Roman numerals for main topics, capital letters for subtopics, Arabic numbers for supporting details. Charts and tables work well for comparison. If you're studying different note-taking methods, you might create columns for method name, best use cases, advantages, and disadvantages. The key principle across all methods is that effective notes are tools for thinking, not just recording. They should help you process and understand information, not merely preserve it. Now we must address annotation, the process of marking and commenting on texts. Annotation transforms reading from passive consumption to active dialogue with the author. Effective annotation involves highlighting sparingly, writing questions in margins, defining unfamiliar terms, and noting connections to other readings or personal experience. The cardinal rule of highlighting: less is more. If you highlight entire paragraphs, you've highlighted nothing. Highlight only key terms, crucial definitions, or particularly important evidence. Margin notes should include your thoughts, questions, and reactions. When you encounter a claim that seems questionable, write "evidence" in the margin. When you see a connection to previous readings, note it. Let me pause here for our first active recall session. I want you to mentally answer these questions before I continue. First, what are the five steps of SQ3R and what is the purpose of each? Second, how does active reading differ from passive reading? Third, what are the three sections of the Cornell method and what goes in each? Take a moment to formulate your answers mentally before I provide them. Here are the answers. SQ3R includes survey, building mental framework; question, creating purpose; read, targeted information gathering; recite, testing understanding; and review, strengthening retention. Active reading involves deliberate engagement, questioning, and analysis, while passive reading involves simply moving through text without deep processing. The Cornell method divides pages into a recall column for key terms, a notes column for detailed information, and a summary section for synthesis. Now let's examine information literacy and source evaluation, which have become critical survival skills in our information-saturated world. Information literacy means the ability to locate, evaluate, and use information effectively. It's not just about finding information. Anyone can Google. It's about determining what information is reliable and relevant. Why has this become so crucial? Because the barriers to publishing have essentially disappeared. Anyone can create a website, post a video, or publish an article that looks professional, but contains completely false information. The SIFT method provides a systematic approach to evaluation. SIFT stands for stop, investigate the source, find better coverage, and trace claims to their origin. Stop means pausing before sharing or using information. The internet rewards speed, but accuracy requires deliberation. Investigate the source means looking beyond the article itself to understand who created it, what their expertise is, and what their potential biases might be. Find better coverage means looking for other sources covering the same topic. If only one source is making a claim, that's a red flag. Trace claims to their origin means following citations back to primary sources. Many false claims spread because people cite sources that cite other sources without anyone checking the original. Let me give you a concrete example using the tongue map misconception from our readings. The original research by Honig showed slight variations in taste sensitivity across the tongue. However, as this information passed through multiple sources, from German academic paper to English newspaper to textbook, it became increasingly distorted until it claimed different parts of the tongue could only taste specific flavors. This demonstrates how misinformation often begins with legitimate information that gets oversimplified or misrepresented as it spreads. The CRAAP criteria provide another evaluation framework: currency, relevance, authority, accuracy, and purpose. Each criterion helps assess different aspects of source reliability. Currency asks whether the information is current enough for your purposes. A medical article from 1950 might be historically interesting, but medically obsolete. Relevance determines whether the source actually addresses your research question. Many students include sources that are topically related, but don't actually support their arguments. Authority examines the author's credentials and expertise. Is this person qualified to write on this topic? What's their educational background? What other work have they published? Accuracy involves checking whether claims are supported by evidence and whether that evidence comes from reliable sources. Purpose considers why the source was created. Is it to inform, persuade, sell something, or entertain? Sources created to sell products will present information differently than those created to inform. Website evaluation requires additional considerations. Domain extensions provide clues. .gov sites are government sources. .edu sites are educational institutions. .org sites are organizations. However, domains can be misleading. Anyone can register a .org domain, so you can't rely solely on the extension. Look for author information, publication dates, editorial oversight, and citation practices. Professional websites will clearly identify their authors and provide ways to contact them. Be especially skeptical of anonymous content or sources that don't provide citations for their claims. Now we need to examine the relationship between information literacy and personal beliefs, because this relationship often determines whether people accept or reject reliable information. Confirmation bias leads us to seek information that confirms what we already believe and to dismiss information that challenges our views, even when that challenging information is more accurate. This is why the tongue map persisted for so long despite contradicting evidence. It provided a simple, memorable explanation that people wanted to believe. Overcoming confirmation bias requires intellectual humility. The recognition that your current beliefs might be wrong or incomplete. Effective information literacy means actively seeking sources that challenge your assumptions, not just those that support them. Let's examine some common misconceptions students have about reading and note-taking, because addressing these misconceptions is crucial for your success. Misconception 1. I should be able to read everything assigned word for word. This is unrealistic and unnecessary. You need to learn strategic reading, skimming for overview, scanning for specific information, and reading deeply only when required. Misconception 2. Good notes capture everything the professor says. Actually, good notes capture the essential ideas and relationships. Transcription is not learning. Misconception 3. Highlighting helps me study. Highlighting without active processing is mostly useless. The physical act of highlighting doesn't improve memory unless accompanied by analysis. Misconception 4. Online sources are automatically less reliable than print sources. The medium doesn't determine reliability. The source's credibility does. Peer-reviewed journals online are more reliable than random books in print. Misconception 5. I can evaluate sources just by reading them. Effective evaluation requires investigating beyond the source itself, looking at the author's credentials, finding other coverage, and tracing claims to their origins. Let's do another active recall session to solidify your understanding of source evaluation. First, what do the four letters in SIFT represent, and what does each step accomplish? Second, what are the five CRAAP criteria? Third, why isn't domain extension alone sufficient for evaluating websites? Take a moment to formulate your answers mentally. SIFT represents stop, pause before acting, investigate the source, check author credentials, find better coverage, look for corroboration, and trace claims, follow citations to origins. CRAAP criteria are currency, timeliness, relevance, applicability, authority, expertise, accuracy, evidence-based, and purpose, reason for creation. Domain extensions provide hints but aren't definitive because anyone can register various domains. So you need to investigate the actual organization behind the website. Now let's synthesize everything we've covered by examining the deeper structure that unifies effective reading, note-taking, and source evaluation. The underlying principle is active engagement versus passive consumption. Whether you're reading a text, taking notes, or evaluating sources, success requires deliberate analytical thinking rather than automatic processing. Effective reading strategies like SQ3R force you to preview, question, and review rather than simply plowing through text linearly. Quality note-taking methods like Cornell require you to synthesize and organize rather than just record information. Rigorous source evaluation using SIFT or CIRAP demands investigation and verification rather than surface-level acceptance. The common thread is metacognition, thinking about your thinking. You're not just reading, you're monitoring your comprehension. You're not just taking notes, you're organizing knowledge. You're not just finding sources, you're evaluating their reliability. This metacognitive approach explains why these skills transfer beyond academics. The same critical thinking that helps you evaluate a research article will help you assess news reports, product reviews, or professional communications. However, there's an important tension in this material that you need to understand. While I've presented systematic methods, real-world application requires flexibility. You won't always have time for the full SQ3R process. Sometimes you'll need to skim efficiently rather than read deeply. You'll need to adapt note-taking methods to different types of content and different purposes. The goal isn't rigid adherence to any single method, but developing a toolkit of strategies you can deploy appropriately based on your situation. This brings us to a crucial point about academic versus professional reading that will affect you long after college. In academic settings, you read to understand, analyze, and demonstrate learning. The reading itself is often the goal. In professional settings, you read to solve problems, make decisions, or complete tasks. Reading is a means to an end, not the end itself. Both contexts require strong information literacy skills, but they apply differently. A nurse reading patient charts needs the same critical evaluation skills as a student reading research articles, but with different time constraints and decision stakes. Let me now address what you need to know for assessment, because understanding these concepts intellectually is different from applying them successfully. When asked to demonstrate note-taking strategies, don't just describe the method. Show how it organizes information for later use. Explain why you chose that particular method for that particular content. When evaluating sources, don't just apply criteria mechanically. Explain your reasoning. Why does this author's background matter for this particular claim? How does the publication context affect reliability? Many students lose points not because they don't know the concepts, but because they don't explain their thinking process clearly. For example, when asked to evaluate a website, don't just say it's reliable because it's a EDU site. Explain what you found when you investigated the author, what other sources corroborate the claims, and how you traced key facts to their origins. Remember that assessment often involves transferring these skills to new situations. You might be given a source type we haven't discussed specifically, but the same evaluation principles apply. Another common assessment mistake is focusing on surface features rather than substantive analysis. Don't just count how many sources an author cites. Evaluate whether those citations actually support the claims being made. Let me give you some memory anchors to help you retain and apply this material under pressure. For reading strategies, remember the acronym SQ3R, but more importantly, remember the principle. Preview before diving in, question actively while reading, and review deliberately afterward. For note-taking, remember that good notes are organized for future use, not just current recording. Whether you use Cornell, concept mapping, or outlining, the system should help you study effectively. For source evaluation, remember that good information literacy requires looking beyond the source itself, investigating authors, finding corroboration, and tracing claims to their origins. Here's a practical framework to anchor these concepts. When approaching any academic task involving reading or research, ask yourself three questions. First, what is my purpose? Am I reading for overview, for specific information, or for deep analysis? This determines your reading strategy. Second, how will I need to use this information later? For discussion, for writing, for problem solving? This determines your note-taking approach. Third, how reliable and appropriate is this source for my purpose? This requires systematic evaluation using frameworks like SIFT or CIRAP. The most important insight from today's lecture is this. In our information-rich world, the ability to read strategically, take organized notes, and evaluate sources critically isn't just an academic skill, It's a fundamental literacy for informed citizenship and professional success. What you do next matters enormously. Practice these methods actively. Don't just read about them. Try the SQ3R method on your next reading assignment and compare your comprehension to your usual approach. Experiment with Cornell notes in at least one class this week and see how the organized format affects your study efficiency. Apply SIFT to evaluate three online sources you encounter this week, not just for class, but for personal research or news consumption. Most importantly, hold this question in mind as you continue your studies. Am I consuming information passively, or am I engaging with it actively and critically? Your answer will determine not just your academic success, but your growth as an educated person, capable of navigating our complex, information-dense world.